Welcome to this episode in the Sabbatical 101 Live Coaching Series, where I bring you behind the scenes of a real sabbatical strategy session with academics from across disciplines. These live coaching sessions give you insight into the questions and worries fellow academics have about their sabbaticals and the practical strategies and mindset shifts that go into planning a life-changing sabbatical. Whether you're dreaming of your first sabbatical or you're in the midst of planning one, I hope these candid conversations will help normalize concerns and challenges around sabbatical planning, provide you with some practical ways forward, and help you get inspired to make the most of your sabbatical. Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. My guest in this live coaching session is Catherine Temple. Catherine is no novice when it comes to sabbaticals and research leaves, but she also knows that each one comes with its own challenges, whether that's childcare, elder care, or just life in general. In this episode, we revisit themes from her past sabbaticals and discuss the importance of not romanticizing sabbatical as a perfect respite from ordinary life, but instead planning for contingencies and recognizing that so-called setbacks are all part of the process. We also talk quite a bit about how to prioritize projects during a sabbatical and how to set personal and professional boundaries to ensure the work gets done. Catherine Temple is a professor of law and humanities at Georgetown University, and she's published two books with support from the ACLS and the NEH, and she's starting her next and probably last sabbatical in August 2025. She'll be working on an academic book titled Ambivalence, The Intention of a Modern Emotion, as well as a collection of poetry, tentatively titled Without Light, There Is No Color, as well as several overdue essays. For the past 10 years, she's also been helping veterans in the Warrior Scholar Project transition into elite colleges. So in her spare time, she'll be developing a small writing coaching business to support non-traditional students as they decode college and graduate school writing norms. I hope you enjoy this episode and get something from it that will help you think differently about your upcoming sabbatical. Hi, Catherine. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited to dig in and hear about your upcoming sabbatical. But before we do that, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your scholarship?
Yes. Well, I've been in the profession for about 35 years and had a few previous sabbaticals. I'm in an English department, but I'm a law and literature, law and humanities person, and most recently been working on the history of emotion in legal context.
So like you just said, you have a sabbatical coming up, but this is not your first one. So could you just say a little bit about your previous sabbaticals?
Yeah, I'm almost afraid to take a sabbatical at this point because they've been a little bit vexed. But the first one, I mean, they did allow me to finish two books. So the first one occurred right around the adoption of our daughter. And that turned out to be obviously, you know, a young child, a very big transition. And the struggle there was just to try to carve out the time around childcare issues for a kind of traumatized 11-month-old. So there was that. And then the second one, my husband got very ill and was in treatment most of the time during my sabbatical. So I was supposed to be working down at the Folger, but I really couldn't leave the house. I was just very vexed, very grateful for both of them, but I'm trying not to do this again in the same way.
That sounds really, I mean, a sabbatical is just such a privilege and you've had a long career so far. So you've had several of them, but it's really a disappointment and frustration that the first two didn't go as you hoped.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually an issue that many people have with their sabbaticals, that childcare issues, elder care issues, health issues begin to feel like a sort of disaster when the truth is, if you hadn't had the sabbatical, you would have still had those issues, but you wouldn't have had that extra time in order to get anything done.
So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I did have a third one after my daughter went to college and everything was pretty stable. And that, of course, was wonderful.
Yeah, you have one
shining example of a sabbatical, and two, that you wish had gone differently, but being on sabbatical gave you the time and space to do the caregiving that you needed to do. So,
and also to manage some work. Yeah, would the caregiving would have eaten everything if I was still trying to teach and do my administrative work. So yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think about this with folks who had sabbaticals during COVID, particularly right at the beginning, and even now. So we're recording this in April 2025, and folks on sabbatical now are having grants canceled, and the world is shifting beneath our feet. Maybe it's more unusual to have a sabbatical where everything goes perfectly as planned.
Well, but I think we idealize a sabbatical as this protected time and protected space, and nothing is going to interfere with the work, but life is still here. The world's still here. Politics are still here.
Exactly. Time marches on. Life continues to happen even during a sabbatical. So what's really exciting is you have, so this is your fourth sabbatical coming up now, and you'll be working on a book. What is your greatest desire for this sabbatical?
You know, that is a hard, I mean, if I could figure that out, I would figure out exactly how I wanted to spend my time. I'm a full professor now, so I'm not under the gun in terms of getting tenure or keeping my job, getting promoted and all those things. This is the first time that's happened. So I have, as many people do, backlogged projects, a couple of articles, things like that. And also, you know, a desire to get a bit of a break, do some travel, go to some conferences. And, you know, when I look at the calendar, it can kind of fill up so that you don't have the interrupted time that you've imagined that you're going to have. My desire would be to do all of those things and write a complete draft of the book in 4 or 5 months. But those goals are so high, I can't imagine anybody being able to fulfill them. So I really want, like, as I've had in the past, a very stable writing practice, less interrupted by travel.
Okay. So it sounds like ideally you would have as much time as you needed to get the projects done that have been in progress, get the draft of the book written, and then also travel. But even before you look at your calendars, you just imagine there's no way all of that is getting done because, like we just talked about, life still happens. One of the challenges is this just maybe having to prioritize. Would that be fair?
I hate prioritizing.
Because it means we can't do everything.
But I want to perfect my Italian. Didn't even mention that part. But yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be important, thinking about time management throughout the day. I think in the past, I used time management techniques to excess so that every single moment was tensely devoted to getting the project done, especially when my daughter was younger. So, I mean, one of the goals here is to work, but work consistently and calmly, rather than feeling like, oh, I'm sitting here waiting to get a prescription filled, so I will read a chapter, right? Filling every moment. And I think that advice was really powerful when I needed to work that way because I had childcare and needed to get tenure. But once it becomes a habit, it's very stressful.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like as you think about your sabbatical, one of the things you might want to try is having a little bit more spaciousness in your schedule and not kind of being so rigidly productive.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, in a way, not being so rigidly productive could possibly lead to better productivity, right? Because, yeah, I mean, one thing I teach in my writing groups and, you know, writing consulting is that you have to create a pleasant experience when you're writing. And people who binge write or work so intensively tend to develop kind of a negative aura around the writing process and then write less. So I know these things, but I need to think through how to put them back into action for myself.
Yeah, for sure. Some of the clients I've worked with, they have a goal of writing in more kind of engaged, meaningful, or beautiful ways, like writing in a way that's not as instrumental and more about making the writing sort of an aesthetic, making the writing beautiful. I think about in run up to tenure or promotion, it's kind of like, okay, I have to crank things out and you have to be rigid because there's a lot you need to do. But now it feels like there's an opportunity to develop a different habit around writing.
So already this process of shifting from this instrumental writing to a more creative feel was present for my second book. I felt like I was having a lot more fun than I did on the first one. Had more confidence, you know, more knowledge, more understanding of what an academic book should look like or where I can deviate from the shoulds. So that was fun. And this one, I mean, there could be a more creative nonfiction approach. I could use some personal experience. And we'll see how that goes because I'm not a great public discloser, although I'm on this podcast.
So you must have some level of comfort with this.
But so that might, you know, that I think doing some writing around that might be helpful. I've been publishing some poetry and short stories, so I'm kind of in that space.
Yeah. So it might even be experimenting with a completely different genre for this book, which sounds really exciting and invigorating too. Yeah.
Or it could turn into two different projects too. You know,
sure.
It could be like I have a draft for a poetry collection and, you know, some stuff like that. So there's just a lot of writing going on. And even though I'm teaching a full load right now and running a program, I'm mostly able to integrate that into my life. So it would be just more integration, I think.
Yeah. So it sounds like when you strip away the teaching and the running a program during your sabbatical, that does free up more time and space for the writing.
But I think the feel that I'm after is the writing is integrated into life. It's not become this huge, you know, huge and very heavy feel to it.
Yeah. You mentioned some personal goals like travel and perfecting your Italian. Would it be fair to say that something you want for the sabbatical that's different from your previous sabbatical is to have more of a balance or more room for personal pursuits, rest, fun?
Yeah, I mean, the Italian is very much related to some of the work. I mean, there's a very interesting strain of theory around the history of emotion in the Italian scholarship. I mean, I'm never going to perfect it, but I am able to read and do some translation. I'd like to get better at that. So it's, I mean, everything's personal, right?
Yeah.
And everything's professional. There's really no dividing point. And I'm comfortable with that. I have been for many years. But yeah, I think I want to have a more relaxed experience. That would be true.
And what kind of travel are you hoping to do?
Well, I'll try to get back to Italy for a couple of weeks in the fall. I always go for about a month in the summer, and do some intensive Italian, and I have a writing retreat already planned for October for a week in the Bahamas. Yeah, yes, I'm suffering terribly with my sabbatical.
Well, it sounds like through the travel, you're cultivating kind of a feeling or a vibe or the way you want sabbatical to be. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. And then there's a wonderful writing retreat called The Porches in Virginia that I usually try to go to for about a week. It's completely unstructured. You create your own structure, but the facility is run and managed by a poet. I've been going there for years. So that would be another thing. But we've already eaten up like 6 weeks of the fall semester, but which is integrated, right?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like eaten up, but the goal of those trips are around writing, right?
Yeah, I would think. Yeah. I'm, you know, I'm just so engrossed when I'm writing.
Okay.
Yeah. So yes, they are around writing. I think one thing that happens, not just to me, but to a lot of people is you have a day that's perfect. Like it's the perfect writing day. You feel great, feeling very creative. You do a lot of work, you put in hours, and then you feel like every day has to be like that. Right. And that's, yeah. I try very hard to keep that in mind and not go into it with that level of perfectionism, because of course, when you're traveling, you want to be doing other things.
Yeah. And I think there are two things that play into that. There's expectation, right? So sometimes I think this happens to me often in the summer, you know, we get to April or May and I say, oh, the summer is coming up. And it's like this long time stretching out in front of me. I feel like I'll get everything done. And then I remember, oh, I have young kids and our schedules change when school ends and we have vacations. And, you know, summer is also a time that I like to slow down a little bit. So I have to adjust my expectations for what that time is going to be. But then also, I think there's a mindset thing, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater or something, right? Where you're saying, I can have a great day and then a mediocre day, but it doesn't mean that the whole sabbatical is ruined because not every day is a perfect day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I also think that one factor for me and a lot of other people is already feeling belated. Like I already feel like this one article that I'm supposed to be working on is overdue, you know, the book is going to be overdue. For most of us, I don't know about you, but we feel that throughout our career.
Yes. I was just thinking this morning about my plan for the summer and the, the papers that I haven't written. And I think part of what my challenge is going to be over the next couple of weeks is saying, are those papers that I'm still going to write or am I going to move on? Because in some ways I've moved on, right? I'm on different projects. And so I struggle a lot with the sunk cost fallacy and saying, you know, is this, do I need to do this, you know, for me, for someone else, for just because,
you know, you said you would do it at some point in the past. And
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I have this one project I love about the value of numbers in the humanities, but it's going to take me a month or more to write that. And it's not directly related to the book. All my other articles are really drafts for chapters in the book. And I sort of feeling like I need to just tell the editor, even in her mind, it's not a fully worked out project. Mm-hmm. I want to write that, but I've got to finish the book first.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is important to do leading up to sabbatical is to look at the range of projects that you have underway or that you've committed to and say, you know, what do I want to prioritize during sabbatical? What am I going to let go of completely? Things that are no longer serving me, no longer aligned with the direction that I'm going in. And what am I going to press pause on and come back to after sabbatical? There's this great book called Essentialism. The idea is very simple, that if we're going in a million different directions, we're not giving our best effort or our highest contribution to anything. And so I think about that, like a sabbatical is a really nice time to say, okay, what do I want to put my energy and effort into and really like dig in and focus on that? So you're not always shifting from one project to the next. With my clients, we do a clear the decks exercise. So what do you need to get off your plate before your sabbatical? And what is your plan for that? Are you just pressing pause or is it something that you're going to disentangle yourself from completely? And there can be a lot of relief sometimes either saying no.
Yeah, unfortunately, I feel like I can get excited about pretty much anything. But I think you're right that like going in every different direction is not very productive.
Yeah. Well, and part of being an academic is we do have these, you know, the research, teaching, and service functions require, they're not very aligned. Like, yes, sometimes your teaching builds on your research or reflects your research, but also being in a class with students is very different than writing about your research. And so I think we're already in a normal semester just going in lots of different directions. And so the sabbatical naturally offers an opportunity to almost see it as folding back into yourself and saying, like, okay, what feeds my soul in my personal life, my professional life? And like you said, for many academics, because the reason we get into this is we're really passionate about the work that we do, those two things are really hard to disentangle.
Yeah. Well, I like that idea of folding back into yourself, because I've often thought about one of the issues when my daughter was young was that the mindset that you take to childcare is completely different from the mindset you have to take to write a book. So childcare, you have to be kind of loose and fluid and go with the kid's flow more or less. And writing a book is a pretty aggressive move. You're creating a world on the page.
Yeah.
And shifting from one to the other was always a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a voyage across a huge sea.
It's jarring, right? At the end of the day, when you're coming from teaching or advising or whatever you're writing, and then you're back into mom mode. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So I that is not a challenge I currently have, but it is something I think about in turn. Like you also have a different mindset for teaching. Mm-hmm. And it is more, for me, at least it's more a go with the flow in which I'm trying to always sort of calibrate what the students need and what we need to do next. And is it really what I planned or is it something else?
Yeah. The other thing I think about a lot was that as much as it's your sabbatical because you're a professor and this is your professional thing, all of us exist within this ecosystem, right? We have spouses or partners or kids or pets or friends. And the sabbatical affects that ecosystem too. And there are ways that that presents a great opportunity. There are ways that anxiety can creep in. I know a lot of my clients worry like, oh, my spouse works from home. And what if I'm just like sitting on the couch watching TV and they're working and they feel something about that, right? But it also creates great opportunities to shift the balance within your household or have more time with your kids or your spouse. And I think what got me thinking about this idea of transitions, right? And so sometimes what's nice in a sabbatical is that you have more time so you can give yourself more of a buffer between the intense work that you're doing and the time you're spending with loved ones or friends. And you're not having to make those like, oh, I just went from telling a faculty member that they're not getting to teach the course that they wanted to teach to, you know, meeting my husband for dinner or whatever. There's a little bit more of a buffer between the different functions.
Yeah. What do you recommend for the issue that when you're on sabbatical, people think you're not working, right?
Yeah.
And so they start asking you, I mean, obviously just say no is really good advice, but I just find it awkward, the awkward interruptions of, but could you in the middle of your day go take the dog to the vet or whatever activities?
Yeah. So what I think where we work on this comes up throughout the program when I work with clients, but where we really dig in is during 1 week of the program, we talk about setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so I ask clients to think of all of the, again, that ecosystem, which is not just professional, it's personal too. And honestly, sometimes the personal boundaries are more sticky than the professional boundaries. Because for many of us, you know, for me, my department was very respectful of my sabbatical. No one needed anything while I was gone. It was humbling. I thought, well, okay, I guess the world did not collapse without me there. It's good to know that I'm not so essential. So, but we talk through things like, you know, how do you proactively set boundaries with students, with collaborators, with colleagues, but then also, but how do you have conversations with the other people in your life who need to understand what your goals and priorities are for your sabbatical? So I've had clients who worry that, oh my gosh, like during my sabbatical, my family is going to think that I just want them to visit all the time, or we're going to spend all this time with them. And so we work through different ways of how do you talk to your family about what your sabbatical is to have them understand it's not just a vacation, you're doing work too, and that you have particular priorities. And we, yeah, thinking about things like even batching, you know, the dog needs to go to the vet or you have doctor's appointments, trying to batch those for particular days of the week as much as you can so that you can preserve the stretches of time for writing and not feel like, oh, I'm writing for an hour, then I'm running out to do this. And then I'm writing for another hour, then I'm running out to do mm-hmm. this. So yeah, we talk about like different strategies, both for communicating about your sabbatical with the people who are affected by it or who may think certain things about it, but then also creating an internal structure where you're setting your own boundaries around the things that are going to come up. We can't control all of these things, but they're, I think, going in with some intention or thinking it through ahead of time can be really beneficial. And a lot of times we can realize the things we have control over that we didn't know we had control over.
Yeah, remembering to do the batching, I think, is really important. And just being able to say, well, that doesn't really work for me.
Yeah.
Also very important.
Right. And you can do batching with things like email. You know, most of us on sabbatical do check our email, right? But if there's someone or a group of people who you know or you'll regularly need to be in touch with, you can say, my plan is to check email on Wednesdays and Fridays. And so you can expect a response from me then.
I'm too addicted to do that. But one thing I love about working early in the morning is that I've cleared the email the night before. Very few people email you at 3 a.m. with an issue that needs to be dealt with. And nobody's calling and nobody's awake. I think I need to really prioritize the first few hours in the morning, because if I can do 2 or 3 hours before 9 a.m, that's a pretty good day, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing when you think about on a daily or weekly basis, what are your goals for sabbatical? If you say 2 hours of writing is a good day for me and you can knock that out by 9 o'clock, then if you can wake up, not even check your email, and do the writing, then suddenly you have the rest of your day as like a bonus, right? You can, you can work or you cannot work.
Well, what do you think is a reasonable goal for someone who's, you know, not, I mean, obviously if I was trying to get tenure and I was really behind, we would be having a different conversation.
Yeah.
Right. But for someone like me who does want to finish the book, but it's not desperate.
I mean, this, I'll give you the unsatisfying answer and then I'll tell you what I've seen.
Other people do. Is that what you're going to tell me?
Well, it kind of depends on you, right? What feels reasonable to you. In my program, I start with my clients. We don't get into the, like, the daily schedule or how many hours am I writing a week. We start with this big picture. What's my purpose? What do I want to get out of this time? Mm-hmm. Again, that's not just the book, but how do I feel now? And how do I want to feel differently at the end of sabbatical? Mm-hmm. If that's a thing for you, you know, some people maybe don't, but most of the people I work with are coming into sabbatical feeling pretty burned out, overwhelmed, or just like, this isn't sustainable. What I'm doing right now, something needs to change. And so we spend time thinking about what are your priorities? What's your purpose? And that naturally, I think, leads into people being able to say things like, you know what? I think I just want to work in the morning. I'm going to have the mornings be my writing time. And that usually looks like 2.5 to 3 hours of writing in the morning. And so what I've seen is some people say, I'm going to write in the mornings and then the afternoons are kind of more relaxed, or that's when I do some email, but I'm also doing, you know, like pursuing my hobbies and interests or meeting up with a friend for coffee. Another thing I've seen people do is say, I'm only working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and taking Monday and Friday off to do kind of personal things. I don't have evidence of this, but I know for myself, like, I had a year-long sabbatical and I did not work for the first half of my sabbatical. I think I was so burned out that there was no other option for me. But I think I accomplished more in the second half of my sabbatical because I did nothing at the beginning than I would have if I had just tried to like push through the burnout. Mm-hmm. I think whether you build in rest at the beginning of your sabbatical, or you intentionally create a more relaxed pace for yourself, I do think that feeds and fuels our productivity, even though it feels scary for most of us to say, I'm going to do less than I think I can or than I think I should.
Yeah. I think we get so socialized into working all the time that I realized that after I got tenure, I thought, well, now I can relax. And then I realized I couldn't relax because I was just too driven by the culture, really.
Yeah. It feels like a spring that's so tightly wound, right? Mm-hmm. I think part of it is a concern that if I take my foot off the gas pedal, I won't be able to find it again. Like if I stop, what if I can't start again?
Well, that raises an interesting question, which was when you switched from doing nothing to making the decision to then return to your research, how did that feel? Like, how did you decide what day you were going to start?
Yeah, it honestly felt great. So part of it, I had a natural break. We spent the first half of my sabbatical in Bordeaux, France, and we had no good reason to be there except that I love traveling and I did a lot of legwork to move my family there. And it was amazing. So it was very easy to take off because there were all these fun things to do and explore. And then we came back. You know, my husband wasn't able to work remotely for more than a semester, so I blame him for not being able to stay for a year. But we came back, you know, around Christmas time. And in January, after the kids were back in school, I was like, I kind of want to start working again. Mm-hmm. It just kind of naturally happened. I was still not working all the time. I was, you know, running, which I had started when we were in France, and just something I wanted to get back into, taking better care of myself. I took a pottery class just because I thought that would be fun. I'm not good at it, but I really liked it. And I just noticed myself getting interested in my work again. Before my sabbatical, I would have told you that there was no way I would have ever wanted to start doing my research again, but I started getting interested in it again. And so then I just naturally picked things back up and, you know, ended up publishing a couple articles and writing a grant proposal with a colleague. I did the things I said I would do in my sabbatical proposal, but I just did it in a more concentrated period of time. Mm-hmm. And no one asked me to report on when I had done everything.
So. Well, they're not going to ask that. They're just going to ask you what you did.
Exactly. And it was, you know, I think sabbatical applications are also, it's kind of like a grant application. It's like, this is, if everything goes exactly the way I planned, this is what I'm going to do. But at least for me at Michigan State, I don't know if anyone reads them, but I think it's like, it's a best guess at what you'll do on your sabbatical. And before I even went away, I submitted an addendum, and it seemed fine. And so then as I looked at my application afterwards and wrote up my sabbatical report, I said, well, you know, I didn't do like exactly to the letter everything I said I would do, but I accomplished the overarching goals that I had for the sabbatical.
Yeah, so I think they want to see some concrete product, but they don't necessarily think that it's going to map exactly onto what you said you would do.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's where I think, particularly, I think for those of us who are taking our first sabbatical and don't have a perspective on this, there can be a lot of fear and anxiety about, like, how do I get all the things done that I said I would do? And what if I don't do everything? When in reality, I think at many institutions, you know,
very highly ranked R1s, you know, might be more focused on that. But I mean, just like proposals for conferences or proposals for grants, it's kind of a fantasy of what you might be able to do.
Exactly.
It's not a contract.
Yeah, exactly. And well, Catherine, I wonder if we could just do one quick exercise before we wrap up, just thinking a little bit about your sabbatical priorities. Okay. So this is less about what's the work you're accomplishing on sabbatical and more about what's the vision or the vibe for the sabbatical. I want to ask you to picture yourself on sabbatical for a moment. So what does it feel like?
Well, it feels like a combination of feeling free and having days without a ton of Zoom meetings or a big commute or whatever, and probably some anxiety about using the time.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I also see myself as working out every day, which I love. That actually is probably pretty realistic.
Okay. Yeah. And based on our conversation, it feels like maybe a little less rigidity to your writing schedule, a little bit more openness. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my tendency is just to go with my impulses. So I feel like writing a poem. I start writing it 2 hours later. I've got a poem, but I haven't done any work on the book. So while you were speaking and while we were talking, I was thinking, really, the thing to do here is to do the early morning writing and then to shift to the poetry or whatever else I want to do later in the day.
Sure.
That really is my best, most sort of cognitively alert time, most focused time. So that's another, I mean, I think that's an image to hang on to. Mm-hmm. You know, I always have really loved that early morning time since I started doing it when my daughter was little. You know, it was a struggle at first, and then it became very freeing.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, going back to your question about how much is a reasonable amount of time to write for, I mean, there's, you know, yourself and how long it takes you to write a book and how much you would get done during those hours. But it feels like that could be a really nice rhythm for you to have this kind of like, okay, get the work done. Not that the poems are not work too, but it sounds like you like leaning into that creative work. And so you'd want to kind of save that as like the treat for after you get the book writing done.
Yeah. Productive procrastination.
Well, is it procrastination if it's something
you want to do? Yeah.
You want to.
I guess productive procrastination is more something you don't want to do, but you feel like you have to do. Mm-hmm. And so you use that as a reward for whatever you trying to avoid.
Is there anything that you're hoping a transformation your sabbatical will bring, or a different feeling or a different habit that you're hoping you'll have by the end of sabbatical?
Well, I think I've for years been moving towards less doing what I should do and more thinking about what I actually want to do. And after the sabbatical, I'll probably move into, we have a very good 2-year phased retirement. I'll be 70 in June. So a year and then another 2 years, and I'll really probably be ready, really ready to retire. So I think getting more relaxed about the workload but also still being productive, which I want to continue after retirement, will be a different mindset. It's gradual. I mean, I'm already feeling like there's certain things I don't want to commit to because they're going to be, they have a 5-year or 10-year lifespan.
So it sounds like the sabbatical could be an opportunity for just some reflection about, you know, what are the priorities moving forward, owning that list a little bit of what are the things that you don't want to commit to or that don't feel like they're in alignment with where you want to go, moving into a phased retirement and then beyond. So there could be some opportunities for that reflection on sabbatical.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think that, you know, my age is going to be total transformation. It would be nice to think that, but I think it's part of this process of shifting my priorities.
Yeah. Well, you know, so one of my clients actually that I worked with who's on sabbatical now, it was also her fourth sabbatical. And she kind of set it up as, oh, the final tour, like having some closure with some projects. And the same thing that you're talking about, like really saying, okay, as I move into this last phase of my career, how do you pare down the things that you don't necessarily want to continue working on, wrap some things up so that you can keep just what's essential as you move forward?
Yeah. You know, one thing I want to do more of is I do a little bit of coaching, writing on the side, a few workshops, things like that. And I think when I'm not teaching a 2-2 load, which is a very low load, I'm aware, but still pretty engrossing. And when I'm not doing that, I would like to develop that a little bit more. But I don't think it's healthy to just be home writing, right? You need to have something a little bit more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think as you look ahead to retirement, having some things that you like doing, right, that are helping you engage with other people. Like, you know, I'm not near retirement, but sabbatical coaching, it's just so, so fun because I get to meet so many new people and be engaged in different kinds of conversations. You can imagine, too, maybe starting on sabbatical thinking about, okay, what do I want retirement to look like? Do I want to start a side business or build something that would eventually be, you know, a part-time thing or a business that you would run after sabbatical or after retirement?
Right. Yeah, and I work with the Warrior Scholar Project during the summer. Mm-hmm. So I've got developed some, and I also was a non-traditional student myself, but I've also worked with a lot of non-traditional students. So that's my sort of niche. I just find that so rewarding to be able to take somebody who's, you know, very nervous and anxious about college or graduate school or law school and kind of move them through that process.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, Catherine, this has been such a great conversation, and I've really appreciated hearing more about your upcoming sabbatical, and I hope that there have maybe been some nuggets of insight throughout the conversation that'll help you as you think about the sabbatical coming up.
Well, thank you, because I do think I have a much better take about on the sort of trajectory.
That's great to hear. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast. I really appreciate it.
And I appreciate you.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.